Hey friends, welcome back to Drink History. I'm your host Alexa Wilkinson.
And I'm your co-host Mia Fiorito.
And this is
Drink History.
Welcome back, friends. Today on Drink History, we will be celebrating National Absinthe Day.
Woohoo! Which is on
March 5th, which is a celebration of the 2007 re-legalization of absinthe in the U.S. And by celebrating that, we're going to talk about... What do you think we're going to talk about, Mia? I think we're going to talk about...
Wine.
Absinthe is what we're going to talk about. So, absinthe is interesting. Mia, do you have a fun story about absinthe in your own personal life that you'd like to share with us?
I don't have anything for absinthe in my own personal life. I've always wanted to try it. And I've always just heard like you go crazy. And if you drink too much of it and you see the green fairy. And the first time I ever was really actually introduced with absinthe was because I was obsessed with the movie Moulin Rouge. And like in the first scene, they're like all drinking absinthe. And then that little green fairy pops up.
But I think we're all sort of acquainted with that rumor mill of like the fantastical, delusional, hallucinogenic nature of absinthe, that they really exaggerated it in that movie.
Yeah.
The point where I was like, this movie's already over the top. Like that can't be true too. I'm sure this is not a big deal.
I don't know. I guess it kind of might be with what we're going to talk about today.
We'll find out.
We'll find out.
I don't have much of a... Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I don't have much of a history of like absinthe drinking. I know it's been in some cocktails. I know I've done a lot of absinthe washes. I've done, you know, used it sparingly and generously sometimes in different recipes. Mm-hmm. The cocktail we made for this one is a really delicious, effervescent, very summery recipe. It's got just fresh lime juice, Topo Chico as the seltzer, because it's like uber ultra fizzy. I drove 40 miles back and forth to go get this Topo Chico. Very frustrating.
Dedication.
Very much dedication to the recipe and the craft and the artistry of mixology.
There you go.
And it's just got a little bit of cardamom bitters and simple syrup and absinthe. It's very, very good. Mm-hmm. And I would drink that all day on a hot summer day. It's going to be my new spring drink. I'm preparing it, saving it in the archives.
Spring drink.
For my many spritzes that I'm going to be making.
Spring drink.
Because we're in another year of a pandemic, so I'm going to have to sit outside on my back area with my patio furniture and just make myself spritzes and cry about how another year has passed without friends.
You know what? We can Zoom. We can Zencaster all day. We can FaceTime.
We could Zencaster all day. not a paid promotion for Zencaster, but we do use their stuff.
Right.
Anyway, all right. So let's get into absinthe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So absinthe has a Netflix series style of a story. Let's be real. Like if you wanted to make a series about absinthe on Netflix, I think it'd be a hit.
Yeah.
But before we begin, it's crazy. Before we begin with this incredible tale of absinthe, let's just first tell you what it is. Let's just get down to that. Mm-hmm. The basics. It is an anise-flavored spirit derived from plants, including the flowers and leaves of Artemisia absinthium, which is grand wormwood, together with green anise, sweet fennel, and other medicinal culinary herbs. Absinthe traditionally has a natural green color, but it may be colorless, and it is commonly referred to in historical literature as la fée verte, which is the green fairy. It is sometimes mistakenly referred to as a liqueur, but it is not traditionally bottled with added sugar and is therefore classified as a spirit. And absinthe is traditionally bottled at a high level of alcohol by volume, ABV, but it is normally diluted with water before consumed, which is how I'm consuming it at this moment, I did a very traditional way of pouring it and making it, and it's very cloudy and delicious. And
how is the traditional nice way? How'd you make it?
Well, I'm going to get into that later. There's different ways to prepare it, but this way is like the French traditional method. Mm-hmm. So you just put the slotted spoon. It's like a flat spoon. It's not really a spoon. It just holds the sugar cube above the glass. And then you slowly pour. I did chilled water over mm-hmm. A Dem sugar cube. And it just puts a little bit of sweetness in there, dilutes it, and it turns into, it's actually like this very light green cloudy.
It's very delicious. It looks pretty.
Mm-hmm. It's very nice. It's very good. I can see what all the rage was about.
I'm coming over after we film this. I'm trying some.
You got it. I have this bottle of absinthe ready to go. Its country of origin is credited to Switzerland, but it's spread across the globe, not only in popularity during the 18th, 19th, and 20th century, but its lore as a hallucinogenic substance and its dangerous psychoactive tendencies. And it made it enemy number one pretty much worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first vilifications of absinthe followed an 1864 experiment in which Valentin Magnan, an influential and well-respected psychiatrist, was appointed physician in chief of France's main asylum, which we all know asylums were really great places back in the day.
So safe.
So, yeah. So he did this experiment where he simultaneously exposed one guinea pig to a large dose of pure wormwood vapor and to alcohol vapors. And the guinea pig exposed to wormwood vapor experienced convulsive seizures. Yeah. While the animal exposed to alcohol did not. So Magnan would later blame the naturally occurring in wormwood chemical thujone, I believe it's how it's pronounced, for these effects.
Oh my gosh.
Absinthe, I know. It's horrible.
Aww.
Like, why do that to a guinea pig?
They're so horrible. They're just like, aw. Okay, I'm sorry. I keep going. The poor little thing, loaf of bread.
No, why experiment on animals at all? Let's please stop doing that. But,
yes, can we?
God, already? It's gotten out of hand. Like, we have enough human people that will be paid for you to inject things into them.
Not me.
Consensually. We'll agree to that.
Yeah, right.
For money. Maybe me sometime down the road if I get desperate enough.
Just not
with being unemployed because of a pandemic. Just not the guinea pigs.
Not the poor animals. They don't. Come on.
I know.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt. That was just maybe that hurt my heart.
It hurt my heart too. So absinthe after that became associated with violent crimes and social disorder. And one modern writer claims that this trend was spurred by fabricated claims and smear campaigns, which he claims were orchestrated by the temperance movement. Here we come back to that. And the wine industry. And one critic claimed, a quote, absinthe makes you crazy and criminal. Provokes epilepsy and tuberculosis and has killed thousands of French people. It makes a ferocious beast of men, a martyr of women.
Yikes.
And a degenerate of the infant. It disorganizes and ruins the family and the babies and menaces the future of the country.
Oh my gosh.
End quote.
And you want to know what? I have a supporting story to go with that.
Okay. Tell me more about how absinthe is terrible.
So you know that I watch like murder documentaries. I watch like 2020. I watch The Night Stalker. I watch like freaking this, that, who killed this person. Like all these shows. Not because
You're a true crime buff.
I am.
The regular crime. Fictional crime.
Yeah, it's terrifying to watch these things because, you know, like certain things are like a lot of the things that I watch are true stories, but it's just, I don't know why I'm so intrigued. So
you are one of millions of people in the world that love true crime.
Right.
Hence the reason that it's so popular as not only a podcast category, right. but also every other show on Netflix, like we talked about earlier.
Right, right. So when I was doing my research, I came across this website, sciencehistory.org, and I found this great. I mean, it's not great because, this is kind of like sad, but like this cool story. So it's called the The Absinthe Murder. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
So it was...
Let me get my blanket.
Yeah, put on that fake fireplace. And your absinthe as you drink the absinthe.
Okay. With two hands.
There you go.
Carefully.
So it was late August 1905 in the small village of Kumonyi. And before you stood, three coffins open to the air. A mother in one, 4-year-old Rose in the second, and 2-year-old Blanche in the last.
Jesus, that's awful.
Terrible. Children, 4 years old and 2 years old. That's like very sad. So,
very sad.
In front of the coffins stood Jean Lanfray, pleading and screaming, "Please tell me I haven't done this. I loved my family and children so much." I know that's not Switzerland, but I'm
having... Are we doing radio? Yeah, are we murder hour?
We're having fun with this. We're having,
no, I got
there's
it.
There's not many quotations, so these voices
the
won't
The evolution
really
of drink history into like a murder mystery hour is fine by me.
It's fantastic.
Okay, continue on. I'm intrigued.
Oh, here we are. So he loved his family and children so much. And Lanfray had like drunk his way through the previous day. And when I say he drank his way through, this man... drank his way through. Apparently he started this like day bender with a shot of absinthe diluted in water, right? So that's how he started his day, right? When like dawn broke. And then a second absinthe shot soon followed that. And then at lunch, during his afternoon break from work at a nearby vineyard, he downed 6 glasses of strong wine. Like, damn, Jean. Jean, I should say. I said Jean. Jean.
Damn.
Like, damn. You are really bending on this bender here. 6 glasses of wine and 2 shots of absinthe so far. So then it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop there. He drank another glass before leaving work. And obviously that wasn't enough. No. So while heading home, Lanfray stopped at a cafe and drank black coffee with brandy. And you would think that this would be like to wake him up, or like maybe that's what he intended. Let me have some black coffee, but let me not, you know, like how some people are like, oh, let me just have coffee. It'll wake me up. It's like, what?
Did he run out of cocaine in the farmland or something? Like, that would have been more helpful.
So
advocating for cocaine.
Don't run. Yeah. So, Lanfray, when he got home, because all of that wasn't enough, he finished a liter of wine, and his wife was just looking at him, and she was like, "You're lazy." And he told her to shut up. He's like, "Shut up. I'm going to do it like this. You're lazy. Shut up." And she goes, "Make me." So this guy, I mean, it's not funny, but this guy, she said, "Make me." And this drunk asshole took his loaded rifle from the wall and just shot her through the forehead. Bam!
Oh my God.
Like, damn. What? Right? Uh-uh. And it didn't stop there. Uh-uh. So little Rose comes in. She's like, "La la la, what was that loud noise?" And he just shoots his daughter in the face. And
Jesus.
Then, yeah, terrible. And then it didn't stop at 4-year-old Rose, obviously, because Blanche is the last victim of his bender, drinking, bending, whatever. So he goes into the next room, walked up to the crib of his daughter Blanche, and just shot her. Like,
oh my God.
Like, what did the babies do? What did the little ones do? Come on. So, yeah, that's terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. And that stuff, like, is just terrible. So,
tell me more.
Yeah. So from this domestic tragedy, the people of Kumonyi came to the conclusion that absinthe made him do it. I mean, it's not that this guy just wasn't an asshole. No way could Jean do that. It was the absinthe. Blame it on the drink, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I guess domestic violence didn't, you know, have a place in anyone's mind.
Crazy. It must have been the alcohol. Like, come on.
Of course. Everyone's always looking for something to blame other than, like,
themselves.
Toxic masculinity and the patriarchy and domestic abuse.
Or just even, yeah, right, like themselves, like you're just the problem. So yeah. he drank so much. Like, come on. It wasn't just that the two, because he only had absinthe in the morning. He had two shots of absinthe in the morning. Everything else was like wine. Yeah, it seems like
wine was his.
Yeah, hopefully it was probably red wine.
You know what probably happened is, like, it seems like he just drank wine all over town, but absinthe at home. So they probably found the bottle of absinthe and they were like, that's the culprit. That's the absinthe.
Oh my gosh. That actually makes sense. You could piece that together. Like, wait a minute. Yeah. Okay. All right. Crime solver.
I mean, I should be a detective.
I know.
One of my next jobs.
Obviously.
You know? But I don't want to work for the police department. I'm going to be just like a PI.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that the FBI already reached out to you, right? And you denied it. You were like,
They did. I'm going to Quantico soon. Just for like the background training.
Right, you know? Right. And then you'll be a PI from there.
I hope to meet Priyanka there. I hope that she and I become friends.
Right.
And obviously run around New York saving the world together. But, you know. Anyway. Back into the story.
So we already discussed that. Everyone thought that it was the absinthe that made him do it, right? Like, they just came to the conclusion. And anti-absinthe sediment had been bubbling through Europe and in Switzerland. It just, like, boiled over at that point. So absinthe, Comonyi's mayor publicly declared, is the principal cause of a series of bloody crimes in our country. A petition to outlaw the drink gathered 82,000 signatures in just a few days.
Wow.
Because of this murder. So the press seized on Lenfray's story, dubbing it the absinthe murder. And for members of the anti-absinthe movement, including many like newspaper editors, two glasses of the pale green liquid explained why a family lay dead. Prohibitionists could not have imagined a more potent metaphor for a social decay. And then there's like this French newspaper that called it the premier cause of bloodthirsty crime in the century. And the newspaper is La Gazette de Lausanne, I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it, but, you know, I'm not going to get too
much. The newspaper of the Seine.
Yeah. Lefray's trial following in February, his lawyers declared him a classic case of absinthe madness and a medically ill-defined affliction, but one that captured the public imagination. The lawyers called to the stand Albert Mahaim, I believe is how you say his name, a leading Swiss psychiatrist, and he examined the defendant and declared confidently that only sustained daily corruption by the foul drink could have given him the ferociousness of temper and blind rages that made him shoot his wife for nothing and his two poor children whom he loved. Prosecution counted that his absinthe consumption was dwarfed by his exuberant intake of other alcohol. And the trial lasted like just a single day. He was found guilty on 4 counts of murder because apparently his wife was pregnant. So this guy killed, and it wasn't with another daughter. It was with his first son. So he ends up killing his wife, his son, and his two daughters. And when he found that out, he actually ends up hanging himself in prison 3 days later, which is like,
oh, wow. Okay. So he
took his own
capital
life.
Punishment in himself. Well, yeah.
That guilt really hit him. I wonder if he would have done it if he didn't find out that he had a son. Because you know how sometimes, like, back in the day, men are like, oh, my God, my son. Because women weren't viewed as such important characters in the family, really.
Just except for baby making.
Yeah. And to sell off his property in a way.
Maybe. I feel like I don't know. That's a good question. I feel like this guy clearly had homicidal tendencies. He clearly, they're probably what, I mean, I'm not going to speculate. I don't know much about this person's past, but like, if you're inclined to like shoot your entire family because you're drunk, you probably were not a stand-up dude. And more than likely,
there's probably some stuff going on behind doors.
More than likely, like, tendency of domestic abuse. But
I'm thinking because it happened in August, and so he was found guilty of the 4 counts of murder in February, and it wasn't until February that he actually ended up hanging himself. So I feel like that impact of him finding out that he had a baby boy on the way just like pushed him over the edge. Because this whole time during the trial,
the situation, right? He's like, Is he defending himself during this trial? I mean, this isn't like the episode about this guy's trial, but
I know. I don't think he was really into it. I think that they were just like, everyone was so against absinthe around this time because it was making, right? It was like allegedly people were going crazy and like it would make you see things, it would make you hallucinate. So I think that everyone just banked on the fact that absinthe was going to be the reason and the cause. And then finally, like the jurors, the jurors of the time were like, no, my dude, you just like drank way too much and you're a jerk and you killed four. By the way, you killed your son too, you idiot. You know, overall, he's an asshole regardless.
In summation, asshole hangs himself. Rest in hell.
Right. And so the murders
uncomfortably.
Yeah. he got what he deserved anyways, even if he did it to himself. So the murders energized prohibitionists and the drink became a Swiss national concern. So the Canton of Vaud, which was containing Camogny, banned it less than a month after Lafray's death. And the Canton of Geneva, reacting to its own absinthe murder, followed suit. And Belgium actually had banned it in 1906. In 1910, the Netherlands, as well as Switzerland, declared absinthe illegal. And in 1912, the U.S. Pure Food Board imposed a ban, calling absinthe one of the worst enemies of man. And if we can keep the people from the United States from becoming slaves to this demon, we will do it. So by 1915, the Green Fairy, or La Fée Verte, right? That's how we say it?
Mm-hmm.
Had been exiled from France, long the center of absinthe subculture. And it's amazing how something that was like a green fairy just so quickly turned into like the green demon. You know what I mean? So
just the demon, everyone's demon.
Yeah.
Well, that's a perfect place to take a break. So when we come back, we'll talk more about the history of absinthe and how it came back onto the main stage. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Okay, so yeah, that green fairy turning into a green demon.
Right.
Ugh, jeez. So here we have, it's now, what, 1906, 1907?
Yeah.
We've got all these murders happening and this moral panic. Yeah, we've got a lot of
everyone's starting to shut it down. Shut down.
Plus,
the
temperance. The temperance movement has happening in the United States. You've just like the banning of alcohol in general has a lot of legs, so I can see how absinthe was up against it. But among the misfortunes leading to absinthe's sharp decline in consumption was the 1901 Pernod plant fire. The distillery that opened in 1797 in Pontarlier, France, by Henri Louis Pernod. It caught fire after a lightning strike.
Wow.
The absinthe shortage. Yeah. I mean, what are the chances? The absinthe shortage was compounded by the supposed role absinthe played in the aforementioned human tragedies, where only a little more than a century earlier, absinthe was said to have cured countless ailments. And it's weird that the drink was now considered a cause for countless more, even though it had cured them before.
Right.
So the ensuing moral panic led to absinthe drinkers being seen as dangerous addicts, as opposed to like fashionable intellectuals. And the near worldwide ban on the emerald substance was enough to keep absinthe out of public consciousness for decades to come. So there you go. Little enemy number one. And it remained sort of like this mysterious, dangerous substance until the 1990s. And it wasn't until the 1990s that absinthe resurfaced out of rumor and speculation.
Wow.
So wormwood, one of the root ingredients is wormwood, as we discussed at the top of the show. And it was found to have curative properties known to French soldiers back as far as the 1840s. And as scientists found proof that wormwood was an effective suppressant of malaria, it grew a lot of medicinal qualities. And absinthe was once again on the cultural map in the 1990s. And opportunistic distillers looked for loopholes in order to produce and distribute the drink once again. The largest loophole that existed actually was in the UK because it was never all that popular in the United Kingdom. So as such, was never technically banned. There's never a ban on absinthe there.
Wow.
So imports and sale of absinthe increased steadily through the 1990s. But brands being sold like Bohemian or Czech branded absinthe were considered of like a lesser product to the original Swiss and French recipes where it was still technically banned. Another legal loophole, which I found funny, was in the cradle of absinthe as French legislation outlawing La Fivère outlawed bottlers and importers to relabel their product for sale in the country. Liquors clearly labeled as absinthe were still banned, but wormwood-based liquors were not. So the substance was essentially the same as absinthe. It could just be, you know, it couldn't be labeled as absinthe. So they could basically make it without labeling it. And another interesting point about French law, though consumption and purchase of absinthe was outlawed in the 1915 ban, production was never outlawed. So they could make it, they can sell it.
What are they going to do? And with according all to some,
I don't know. It's these loopholes and these like prohibition laws. I just don't understand. It's not well put together.
Yeah, it was doomed to fail.
So, yeah, according to some sources, it's the production of it really never truly ceased. But however, the true resurgence of French absinthe came in the year 2000, which was 21 years ago. It's crazy to think of.
Yeah.
When the first bottles of absinthe marked with the given name Lafite Absinthe were sold in France and abroad. The brand claimed to be the first to distill and bottle absinthe in France since 1915. And the worldwide curiosity had an outlet in what was billed as the genuine article, French absinthe. The early 2000s saw a repeal of absinthe bans around the world. I think people realized that it wasn't that big of a deal. Just a century after the bans were put in place and a little over two centuries after the modern recipe was popularized. I'm leaving that in. I can't say this word.
How can I say it? I'm the one who has the worst luck with words.
Popularized.
Well,
it's, you know what it is? It's a popular pies.
Popular pies. Right.
Popular pies. Great. Good job, Alexa. You're very smart. Moving on. It was popularized. In 2005, Switzerland repealed its ban and once again making absinthe legal in its country of origin. Woo, yay! And as of 2007, at least two brands of absinthe were being legally brought in and sold in the United States. And here we are today with my genuine bottle of absinthe, refined, remade, skillfully handcrafted. Delicious. Delicious. Made with beet sugar.
Wow.
Cheers.
Beet sugar. Yum.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Beet's got a lot of sugar.
Is it good? Good? Like, would you recommend for our listeners to buy a bottle of absinthe just to have or no?
Absolutely. Absolutely. First of all, it's in our OG first episode cocktail.
That is very true. Mm-hmm.
It's in Avu Carré.
Mm-hmm.
Absinthe. It's in lots of drinks and it's delicious when you dilute it. It's 110 proof, so I wouldn't recommend just like taking a shot of absinthe.
Wow.
So what a freaking tale. Like,
yeah. Oh, yes.
No other liquor.
Liquor.
IMO. Liqueur. Has this much drama surrounding
drama,
or Jean Stelre. This is a very dramatic fucking
it's
alcohol.
A Moira Rose.
It is the Moira Rose.
Bebe.
Of liquor. Bebe. She's the best character on TV.
If anybody out there watches Schitt's Creek,
then David. Then Alexis.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mr. Rose.
Mr. Rose.
Johnny Rose.
Yeah. Oh my God! Oh, but they're all so great. Yeah, but Patrick's great. Anyways, we're not doing an episode on the Schitt's Creek, but
who was that laugh?
We just enjoy it.
Enjoy the day. This chilly, windy day. Okay. Oh. Mia, you have some fun facts for us about absinthe. Yes. Why don't you tell us what those are?
So I have a couple. It kind of goes hand in hand. The first two kind of go hand in hand with what you were saying about its medicinal like properties before it started becoming like the not medicinal thing in public's eye. So it aided in childbirth, or doctors would actually prescribe it to aid in childbirth, and it was prescribed for menstrual pain, jaundice, anemia, and rheumatism. But
good to know, add that to the list of things to use.
Menstrual pain.
During my cycle of menstruation.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go buy a bottle right now. I also had jaundice as a baby, so they could have just, you know, slipped me some as a little baby.
You did?
Little baby. Yeah. I was,
there's also yellow. A fun fact about Mia for you.
Mm-hmm. A little fun fact about Mia. I was born yellow.
Her liver was not functioning, and then it got better.
My whole skin was yellow. So when the bubonic plague returned to England in the 17th and 18th century, many people burned wormwood, which obviously is in absinthe, to fumigate infected houses. Isn't that like, that's crazy. So you're drinking something that also fumigates these infected homes. And it also, the wormwood, because you were talking about soldiers, like, they were also given it because it would ward off insects from them. So you're drinking something that is like toxic in a sense.
Not, you know what I really mean? Like, I mean, well, insects don't like mint oils.
I guess you're right.
And we use mint oil.
That's true.
I put peppers in some plants to ward off insects.
Oh my God, that's a really
Did you know
idea.
Also, here's another fun fact about insect repellent, coffee, because coffee's actually a natural insect deterrent because the insects don't like the high of the caffeine.
Really? I'm going to go sprinkle that down in my soil, all my plants in this house. You're about to get some coffee. Yeah. Wake up!
Coffee grinds are a really good way to ward off insects in a garden that is not harmful to the soil.
That's amazing to know.
Please correct me.
I'll do it to my least favorite plant, and if it dies,
DHP
I'll still be
fans, listeners. Yeah. So anyway, back to absinthe.
Yeah. So absinthe. My last little fact that I have is that adding to the absinthe's negative reputation in the 19th and early 20th centuries, so late 19th and early 20th centuries, makers of the drink omitted the traditional coloring phase of production in favor of adding toxic copper salts to artificially induce a green tint. How terrible is that? And this practice may be the reason for some of the allegedly toxic historical associated stuff that happened.
Stories.
This, yeah. That happened with this beverage. That's crazy. Adding toxic copper salts.
Well, but of course. And that falls that rings true for me. That feels like a very true fact. I mean, the fact is true. But it's like bootleggers and people trying to make cheap alcohol and trying to move product back in the day, they'll cut it with anything.
Yeah.
And they'll try and pass it off as the original and real deal. But like it's toxic and it causes severe health issues.
Yeah.
Like we did with, you know, gin and a lot of other stuff during Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
So that holds true for me. I do know that, and here's some other fun facts. There are different types of absinthe.
Oh, really?
It's not just the one type of absinthe. So let me pull them up. So there's a blanche absinthe, which is white in French. And it's also referred to as Le Bleu in Switzerland. And it's bottled directly following distillation and it's clear.
Okay.
So there's no coloration to it. A lot of the color comes from the chlorophyll and the herbs that are used.
Okay.
The vert absinthe, which is green, la fille vert, it begins as blanche and then it's altered by the secondary maceration stage, which we talked about with the herbs and the distillation being like this high ABV. It really pulls those oils and color out of the herbs. So that's why it turns this like really lovely green hue. Absenta, which is absinthe in Spanish. So I don't, I'm not a Spanish speaker. I apologize for not using a Spanish accent as an American person. But it's sometimes associated with the regional style that's often, it often differs slightly from its French cousin. Mm-hmm. And it can taste different a little bit. It's not crazy, but it has more of like a citrus flavor. Hmm. And then there's a German homemade absinthe called Hausmat. I'm sure that's wrong.
That's it.
Hausmat.
Get it.
Which is German for homemade. Again, if you speak German and I butchered that, leave us a voicemail on Anchor and tell me how to pronounce it. And that goes for French, Spanish,
yeah,
or just really good English speakers yeah. that can tell me how to say.
I don't know how to read any words.
Popularized. Anyway,
or back to Parisian.
We're working on it. We're very smart people. It's when we have words in front of us to read that
so
we get
bad.
Mumble jumbled. But anyway, Hausmat, German homemade abbreviation, HG, refers to clandestine absinthe, not to be confused with the Swiss La Clandestine brand. Just don't confuse it, okay? Don't do it. And then there's other people that like sell absinthe kits. Don't confuse it with that. Hausmat absinthe is produced in tiny, tiny quantities for personal use and not for the commercial market. So it's like an actual thing that they know is happening and they're letting it happen. It's like bathtub absinthe. Clandestine production increased after absinthe was banned, of course, and small producers that like went underground and they like researched, but they were doing it, you know, in Germany in their bathtubs. And then there's the Bohemian style absinthe, which is also referred to as the Czech style absinthe. Also referred to as anise free or just absinthe without the E, because it doesn't get that E. It's best described as wormwood bitters. It's produced mainly in Czechia, from which it gets its designation as Bohemian or Czech. And people don't like it that much, but it is what it is.
Wow.
So those are sort of the different sort of, yeah.
Very cool.
Styles of absinthe.
I had no idea that there were that many.
There are.
It's like one for each of my personalities.
Exactly. One for each of my... I have absinthe of the day. Like underwear. Mm-hmm. I have my Wednesday underwear and my Wednesday absinthe.
Yeah, exactly.
I like a nice Hugsmut absinthe on Wednesday.
Yeah. Get you through
keep
that
it spicy,
yeah. Get midweek. You through that midweek crisis mode.
Just kidding. I have one of those every day.
Yay, me too.
But there are some notable famous absinthe drinkers, and Mia, let's go through that fun list. Why don't you start us off?
So I have from same website sciencehistory.org that Ernest Hemingway was known for drinking absinthe, and he called it, and I quote, opaque, bitter, tongue-numbing, brain-warming, stomach-warming, idea-changing liquid alchemy, saying it's supposed to rot your brain. It's supposed to rot your brain out, but I don't believe it. It only changes the ideas. And he captured the danger and allure of the pale green drink in like that quote. And he promised that it would bring like new ideas, and that, you know, to be insane is pretty much how you become like this like great person. Not to be insane, but you know what I mean? Like it's not as bad as people are just saying. It's just that some people can't handle the mind altering effects, I would say, is what he's saying.
But he could.
Yeah. Know? Right. Well, like, damn. You know how certain like artists are always deemed as insane. Like the good ones, they go crazy.
When it suits societal's narrative about who is normal and who is insane.
Right.
Yeah.
Who else?
I have one.
Tell me.
I think the most famous one, I think that we all know of, especially because absinthe, which is the absinthe I'm drinking right now, the packaging for their absinthe comes in a box with Van Gogh's face on it. So Van Gogh had a love affair with absinthe and is considered like one of the most famed lovers of absinthe in history. And it's rumored that not only did Van Gogh enjoy absinthe to the extreme, but that he also devoured the oils and turpentines used in his paintings.
That's insane.
Maybe not an absinthe role model. Speculation about odd lighting effects in Van Gogh's work is sometimes attributed to a case of epilepsy. But accurate medical diagnosis of Van Gogh's various conditions is unavailable. Obviously, I don't think a lot of people wrote this down. I don't think he went to the doctor that much, honestly. But Van Gogh scholars tend to agree that he displayed not only in his work, but also in his letters, all signs of full-blown absinthe alcoholic. So what we can say for sure about Van Gogh is limited to this, that he was exceptionally troubled as he was brilliant. I'm not going to blame absinthe for anything. I just know he really enjoyed it. And I like it, too. It's a nice sipping drink. So, Van Gogh, you and I have that in common.
Van Gogh, you go.
You go, Van Gogh. Stop. Is there anyone else? I know there are a couple others.
I found that Oscar Wilde, who is a huge famous playwright, he declared, "A glass of absinthe is as poetical as anything in the world. What difference is there between a glass of absinthe and a sunset?" So he was a drinker of, right? Nothing at all.
None. Nothing at all.
They're all the same. So he, well, I know. They're all the same. He was one that I found.
So there are a couple others that we found, maybe not as well known over here in America, but Charles Cross, he was a Renaissance man. He did literally everything, and he drank like 20 absinthes a day. Charles Baudelaire, he was alive for merely 46 years, and he loved absinthe, so I'm seeing a trend. Paul-Marie Verlaine was an art school staple poet. He drank himself to death, but his choice was absinthe. So really on a roll here. Arthur Rimbaud, the young, talented poet, he fell in love with Verlaine. And soon after his arrival in Paris, he began his proclivity for the drink of absinthe. And his artistic life ended abruptly. But aww, he was a lover of absinthe and the bohemian lifestyle. Who else? There was
Pablo Picasso dabbled in it for a few times, okay, for a little bit of time.
He dabbled.
Mm-hmm. And then there was this other painter.
I'm not seeing any notable women who loved absinthe of this time.
Right. So there are two other. So I was reading that Pablo Picasso, obviously I said, dabbled in it for a little bit of time, but he never like gave himself to absinthe. It says in this article,
he never gave himself over to absinthe.
Yeah, he never like got lost in it.
But absinthe didn't show up at his door with a pamphlet. And
right. Would you like to sign up with our Lord? Would you like to sign up for our Lord absinthe?
And Wormwood Savior?
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, no, I'm good. I'll read the pamphlet, but I'm good. You know?
But there was one other person that did read the pamphlet, signed up.
Yeah.
It all.
Edouard Manet. And
Edouard Manet.
Yeah, Edouard Manet in 1859.
Good job.
And so he painted this painting that was called Absinthe Drinker. And apparently it was a realistic portrait of a street bum in rags, wearing a gnarled top hat, and his like left foot is thrust forward in like this defiant way, but next to him sits an emerald glass, which obviously was absinthe. And Manet's painting was rejected from that year's Salon of Paris because it had absinthe in it. Mm-hmm. And his mentor, Thomas Couture, he was like, "My poor friend, you are the absinthe drinker. It is you who have lost your moral faculty," or whatever he said. And like,
faculté. I'm sure he said it en français.
Yeah.
However, I did enjoy the caricatured accent
you just unleashed. I really tried. I thought that was interesting that his painting was rejected because they didn't agree with it.
So there's a whole thing that's like Monet versus Manet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a funny So Manet's work features people, often mm-hmm. with harsh contours and like abrupt contrasts. And Monet usually paints like landscapes. So
Right.
Yeah, like the famous Monet paintings of just like, you know, ponds and Manet. So it's actually, I think, wasn't there a funny quote in Clueless about a Manet? Like, from far away, she's pretty, but up close, it's just a mess.
No, but that's hilarious.
When Cher's describing Amber, I will never forget. And I think that's why the only reason I ever really knew when like anything art history came up in any of my schooling, Monet versus Manet. And that is why. Oh, and then there's a reference of it in Ocean's 11.
That's hilarious.
I'm a weird knower of quotes of movies.
That's good though.
So Monet and Manet, I'm sure both drank absinthe. Let's just be real.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say for argument's sake that this was very popular and most people drank it, but these people were on the map and in the public limelight and they were probably dealing with a lot of their own internal demons, and alcohol doesn't really help that ever. So I think also the way that we perceive absinthe and the way people are on absinthe is through a lot of influence in the media. Yeah. And especially, you know, we talked about Moulin Rouge, mm-hmm. this like highly fantastical, affected version movie. Of.
If yeah, no one has seen that movie, please watch it. Is it Kylie
Minogue, the Green Fairy? Kylie yes. Minogue is the Green Fairy. Mm-hmm. I knew that. But she's depicting this like hallucinated, you know, sort of dancing Green Fairy. There's a bunch of other movies where it's in, like in Alfie with Jude Law and Susan Sarandon. And then another
funny
most recent. Yeah. Another most recent movie. I've never seen it. It's called Girls Trip. It's in 2017. I need to watch it, by the way, because Regina Hall, Queen Latifah, and Jada Pinkett Smith are in it. So I'm absolutely watching this tonight. I cannot wait. And the girls feel the effect of absinthe at a club, and they grope each other. I'll watch that.
Fun.
Fly into space. But the real showstopper is when actress Kate Walsh drinks a candle thinking it's a cocktail. So that's fun.
Oh,
so
no.
They, I think they're trying to put this extreme, you know, these extreme properties on absinthe as being like not only hallucinogenic but aphrodisiac,
right?
Makes you horny, apparently.
It so makes that's you
so
horny.
That's absinthe. Isn't absinthe crazy?
Yes,
isn't it crazy?
It's crazy, but in an interesting way. You just want to learn a little bit more.
Exactly, and I think for not this episode and not doing the research, what I have actually had just absinthe in a glass with some water. I've never had it prepared traditionally. I've been to Switzerland. I've been to France, and I was a teenager.
She
and
saw
I was
your mother's underpants. Sorry, I had to.
That was funny. I would have been able legally to order absinthe. And I think I remember sitting with my friends around the table thinking like, should we order absinthe? And I never.
You didn't do it.
Well, I never did because I think we were too scared to. Because it's intimidating. You look at all these like grand fashionable ways of having served it when it's just like water trickling down from this like copper pot.
Right.
And it seems really, it seems like unattainable to have the level of absinthe that you think people should have it at. Like it just seems like there's a preparation involved.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't talk about the preparation. Okay, so the way that I did it today is just the traditional way, which I talked briefly about earlier. You're using the slotted spoon, which some of these slotted spoons are beautifully designed. The one that I have came with the bottle that I bought. It's this just like beautiful.
Oh, that is nice.
It looks like a leaf. And it's got like absinthe written on it and the ingredients in it. And I think it's just got some sort of like little mantra. It's just really cute. It's got a little hilt on it. So it fits nicely on your glass, and sort of all of them come with this. But all you do is you just put a sugar cube on top and you slowly drip cold water, and it makes the absinthe cloudy. And it's just delicious, and it's nice and clean and light. There's a Bohemian method in its recent invention that involves fire.
Wow.
Not a lot of people like this method. I think it's mostly for like showmanship. The sugar is pre-soaked in alcohol, usually more absinthe because it's such a high proof, and then set ablaze. So the flaming sugar cubed is then dropped into the glass, thus igniting the absinthe. And finally, a shot of water is then used to douse the flames. So I could see this being mostly like a bartender trick and not necessarily adding to the flavor. But maybe the fire caramelizes the sugar in a way that's pleasing to the taste of it. You know, you never know.
Right.
But it tends to produce a stronger drink because you're not using as much water and diluting it. It's sort of adding more absinthe on absinthe and then just putting it out with water.
Mm-hmm.
In the 19th century Parisian cafes, upon receiving an order of absinthe, the waiter would present a patron a dose of absinthe in like a suitable glass, sugar, an absinthe spoon, and a carafe of iced water. And you have these really elaborate, like, slow dripping ice water fountains. And I think that's what intimidates people if you do it this way. I think people just like don't know what to do with this contraption on their table. And then, you know, I just think in the way that we sort of popularized in the United States, putting it in cocktails makes it a lot more accessible for people. So it became a good wash for a glass, maybe a splash just to add a little bit of anise flavor. It wasn't really used as the predominant ingredient. It was just more like enjoyed as a backbone flavor or a backing flavor to a cocktail. But honestly, don't be intimidated by it. I highly recommend people try it if you're really, if you like anise, and I don't even like licorice. I don't like black licorice. I am not a black licorice fan at all. Ask my wife. She loves it. When she buys it, I'm like, sit over on the other end of the couch. I don't even want to smell it. I hate it. But absinthe is delicious. It's light. It's that anise flavor that you love in like cooking when you just like drop it in, and it's this effervescent herbaceousness that's really beautiful to it. So I highly recommend doing it. Don't be intimidated. Pour a little bit of water in there, add some sugar, bing, bang, boom, you're good.
I was never a black licorice fan either, and it wasn't until recently, you know, it's like your taste buds change every 7 years, but it's like, it wasn't until recently the only way I can have a taste like that, which I'm sure I would enjoy it the way that you're having it right now, but is Sambuca.
With my espresso. Fans of Sambuca will like it.
Yeah.
You'll like it.
So and I should go buy a bottle after we're done recording.
You don't have to buy it, girl. I got it.
Yeah, you're right.
I have a whole bottle here. I'm not drinking it like a crazy person. Like, I'm
we're about to be Jean like a Lefroy. Normal
human. Don't compare me to that man.
The murders of
Beacon. I'll drink it like the noble person I am.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a noble person.
You're a noble person.
A noble they. I'm a they-dy today.
So am I coming over Thems and drinking and some absinthe with you?
Yeah. Get a negative COVID test and then come on over.
Yeah, that's true. I'll do that.
Go get your rapid test and come on over. Anyway, so that, my friend, is our show about absinthe.
Woohoo! I enjoyed
this one. Me too.
Not that I haven't enjoyed the other ones, but this one was fun.
This one was very fun.
We had a little bit of murder, and we had a little bit of factual.
Murder. And mystery. Yeah. And a lot of nerd facts.
Yeah.
Which is how I like it.
It was good.
I love it. Join us next week. We're going to be talking to Ann Davis, the co-author of Cocktails Across America. It's going to be a really fun episode looking into the life of escapism and cocktail culture and life post-prohibition. So that's going to be a good episode next week. Mia, any last words before we leave the podcast spectrum and sphere?
I guess ta-ta for now. Ta-ta for now, my dear listeners, my dear friends and family and foe.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. And to the green hour.
To the green hour.
To l'hour. L'hour.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Again, this has been Drink History's wonderful look into absinthe. I am your host, Alexa Wilkinson.
And I am your co-host, Mia Fiorito.
And this is
Drink History.
Drink History! Drink History is produced by me, Alexa Wilkinson, and our theme song is by Blue Topex. Episodes will be released every Wednesday and distributed by Anchor.fm. Visit drinkhistorypodcast.com for more info and help us out by sharing and rate and listen where all podcasts are available. And also feel free to leave a voicemail on Anchor and let us know how you feel about the show or just any questions or comments for us. We'd love to hear from you. All right, folks, cheers. butter. You love it, right? Okay, us too. But have you had Noumi peanut butter? All right, let me tell you about Noumi. So before that first spoonful, you may think that Noumi is just another brand of peanut butter, but give it a try and you'll experience a dazzling new flavor that's putting peanut butter on a whole other level. Noumi's award-winning signature blend of organic peanut butter is made with just 5 ingredients and sweetened with dates. It's a naturally perfect balance of sweet and salty. And as a personal fan of this peanut butter, I can tell you it's like nothing I've ever tried before. There's no palm oil, no added sugar here, just organic and all-natural ingredients that are better for you and the environment. That's right, a sustainable, clean-label peanut butter that's the perfect pantry addition for peanut butter lovers of all ages to devour and delight. So what are you waiting for? Visit NoumiBrand.com and use the code DRINKPB15 for 15% off your online order. That's NoumiBrand.com for 15% off your online order. Supplies are limited, so scoop up Noumi peanut butter today.